in content we're playing. We didn't want to say 35 or 40% in case we couldn't meet that in any given period. We had, well, I didn't, you know, it's my impression of what we're doing now is that we are exceeding 25%, and we think that, that we will be able to go beyond that in the next year or so. We're just, you know, I just wasn't really sure how low, you know, or how high I ought to set it, in, you know, as a minimum.
So you feel that you can do better, and in fact, you say you're doing better.
We are doing better. Yes. It's just, you know, as I say, I'm not really sure what levels other radio stations were setting in that regard, and so that was just a figure we...
Thank you. In the presentation this morning, we heard that the proposed station will promote interaction between the university and the community, and also that the station will bring the ivory tower of the university to the community. Mr. Kearney, I'll ask you this question, but in all fairness, it should be answered by those that uttered these words, and my question is this. How will you achieve these objectives, and how will your programming reflect these objectives?
Do you want to take that? Should I?
Well, I think that we, I don't know if I misread Hillary or Diane, but I think that the intent was to suggest that what is out at the university is not so detached from the community as a whole, that because of the large number of students that and faculty and staff that are out there, you know, they are part of the community, and so, you know, the university can't be seen as just an isolated unit which has no contact whatsoever, except for the fact that the people live off the campus. And as a result, the people that live on the campus are affected by, you know, many issues which are, you know, equally valid for other members of the community, and, you know, we are focusing on those problems which we find people at the university have, but, you know, as I say, I don't think that they're isolated specifically for those people. We have a very large staff who are, I think, creative, and as young people who really want to do something special, they take an interest in you know, creating programs and finding those issues which need to be dealt with. And I just think in that way, you know, what we're doing is not isolating the university, but rather presenting our view of what's going on, you know, with the university as a focus, but certainly not, you know, restricting it completely to that.
If I may, my intention in uttering those very words was that often the university is referred to as an ivory tower, in that people are saying that, well, university students do tend to be idealistic. I think that is quite healthy to a certain extent. There's a certain amount of enthusiasm inherent in that, a certain amount of creativity. It's very healthy, but also I think people tend to think that university students happen to have their head in the clouds, and we don't think that's true at all. And we just want to prove how very down-to-earth and practical a lot of things that are going on out there are, and just really my comments were made in that sense.
And I take it, or should I say, I think you'll agree with me that you could use your community free access time as a vehicle to attain these objectives.
Certainly.
Yes. And in that regard, you're proposing 3 hours, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, initially, as I say, we have no experience in this area. We don't know, you know, and even in our campus programming, when we give, you know, a 15-minute block to a campus group, we want to find out how they're going to react to it and whether they're going to be able to fill that time period with programming, which, you know, they feel is useful and that they can keep it up. Yeah. And, you know, we didn't want to overreach ourselves initially, and once we feel that they're comfortable with it, we can establish a, you know, a basis so that sort of thing continues. We don't want to be faced with groups who are just coming in and then sort of disappearing or suddenly don't, you know, aren't able to make a commitment to using the time adequately.
That'll be part of the growing pains.
Yeah, I suppose.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Patrick?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have two questions. And to the panel, anybody can answer that. Can you give us some indication how students are chosen or elected to the executive? And is that covered anywhere in the bylaws of your alma mater society?
It is in the bylaws. What happens is students, anybody can join. Any student can join CITR UBC Radio. We're going to open it up a little bit. Now, maybe let some non-students in, but they would not be able to run for the executive. Students will join, they will get to know what's going on, they'll run, and the three elected people, they'll just be running a regular election. Now, as for the appointed members of the executive, it's...
Who appoints them? Well, this is
the three elected members appoint the other members. The president, the vice president, and the business manager appoint the program director, the secretary, the so on and so forth. And then the program director is approved by the board.
And those three run for elections, and that's how they're chosen. I see.
Yeah.
Thank you. You mentioned to Commissioner Klingel on your format, and you've indicated that your audience, university audience, or population approximately 30,000, and a listening service area probably of around 150,000.
Mm-hmm.
And when you chose your format, was there any consideration given to that wider listening audience of 150,000, or was it strictly geared towards your 30,000 university population?
It was pretty well geared towards the students.
Mm-hmm.
If I may add, a very significant portion of that 150,000 of the community are students. Students tend to live in that area primarily. Also, as I mentioned before, we did have a view towards serving the community, certainly, because in the clubs and organizations of UBC, as I did mention, they are part of societies which originated in the community. So that way there is a very direct link.
We also have a very large non-student listening audience living pretty well in that area that we wouldn't want to lose.
But was the format based on music format on any kind of a survey or phone survey?
The music format?
Yes.
No, it was not.
It wasn't.
It was based on what we're already doing and what people are already responding to.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Grace?
Question only. Perhaps this question should be addressed to Ms. Stout, as the person who will be the continuity of the station. You'll be there while student volunteers come and go over the years.
Yeah.
So you're important. Standards of toleration of what is acceptable material varies widely. Certainly, what a university community would accept and not worry about might cause problems for a non-university group. It seems to me that you're aware of certain notoriety about some material as a result of some material broadcast over some student stations. I was wondering what safeguards you might have put in place to protect yourselves and everybody against sort of gross violations of taste.
We tell people. We never tell them what to play. We tell them what they can't play. And we are aware of specific kinds of songs or things people are liable to say that are gross violations of regulations, and we specifically warn them about it. We keep warning them about it all year, and if somebody does it, he's out.
Thank you. That's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Robson?
Just one or two other brief questions, Madam Chairman. I believe your application states that your broadcast hours would be 8 a.m. to midnight. Do you see yourself extending those hours at some point? Or?
They're actually 8 a.m. to 1 a.m.
To 1 a.m.
Yes. We might possibly sometime. I would not say no, we will not extend those hours. Our first extension would be in the mornings before we went into all night. but I can't see that happening within the next year or two.
Mm-hmm. No. Now, we were talking about access a while ago, and most of the focus was on community access. Would you be prepared to provide access to other student groups?
Yes, we have. Two of our 3 hours are set aside for that.
I see. And just one other question. Do you have some kind of a crash course or a training program for your volunteer workers?
Yes, in Schedule 25, actually, of the application, I believe there is included a training manual for production. We also have their materials, tips for announcers. The announcers are thoroughly trained by the program director and the music director.
I see. Thank you.
Legal counsel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have a few brief questions about your news programming. Is this mostly university-oriented news and public affairs programs?
Yes.
It would be. Now, I understand you're proposing 3 hours a week of news program.
That's correct, yeah.
What would be the scheduling of these news,
well,
news items?
Well, they run five times a day, and currently we are running our first one about 10. Three of the newscasts are extended in length, and then we have two supplementary newscasts which deal specifically with the campus material, and then the two extended ones deal with some of the, you know, the stuff that comes in via wire. As yet, we're introducing a new morning program quite soon, so the time of the newscast may change as yet, but right now one does take place at 6 o'clock, one at 4 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and 10 o'clock. I believe those are the hours.
Have you thought about scheduling one news program in the evening?
We have considered this, and up to now, you know, talking to our news director, he would rather have his public affairs programming and so on take place in that period as opposed to a newscast.
So you're saying there is a public affairs program in the evening then?
There is programming in that period, yeah.
You're saying there is programming, I'm asking, is there
public,
some kind of public affairs? Or
there is public affairs programming in
there
that
is.
Area.
Thank you. Now about your music, Ms. Stout, you referred to it as being great, and apparently someone else referred to it as being weird. What you're proposing rock music, a rock format, I gather. What type of music would you be playing for? Give me an example of various artists that would be played a lot on your station.
Well, first off, the artists that are played on our station, I think, for the most part, in fact, when we sat down recently and looked at what music we were playing and what other stations were playing, we arrived at a very high figure of music that was not being played elsewhere, even at all. Well, perhaps on their features of new albums and so on. But artists, say, like The Clash or U2 or a band called Ultravox, or even some of the, say, R&B, the Fabulous Thunderbirds, The Jam, you know, the list is endless, really, because
each week... Most of it being non-hit, I gather.
They are. Well, not in Vancouver anyway, I would think.
I have one last question. Is there anyone here that sits on the Board of Students' Council?
That sits on Students' Council? Yes, Chris does.
I have your bylaws here, and I'm wondering, I have a question also that Mr. Kenny can address. There's a note here that the CRTC requested the reduction because the chief AMS director is a subversive American agent. And my question is this a reflection of the type of words that would be uttered on your station?
Could I answer that? Students' Council did that because that was the sixth change in five meetings that they'd had to do. And they were beginning to think it was, they kept changing for us so that we could do what we needed to do. But that is not, that sort of irreverence. Well, you know, we are slightly irreverent, I would say, on our radio station. I would say council is not usually that irreverent.
A little campus humor.
Yeah, a little campus humor.
Very understandable. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Does that complete your presentation, Ms. Dow?
Yes, it does.
It's fine. You will be returning later on in intervention, and for now we will have a 15-minute break, and then we will hear the application of CJAS.
Thank you.
Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We'll now hear item number 6. This is an application by CKWX Radio Limited for a broadcasting license for an English language low power FM radio station at Vancouver, operating on a frequency of 101.9 megahertz with an effective radiated power of 50 watts. From CJAS FM Vancouver. There are non-appearing interventions filed to this application, and appearing for the applicant, Mr. Tom Peacock, Mr. Harry Boone, Mr. Bill Hutton, and Mr. Stan Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Peacock. If you'd introduce the members of your team. I would just say that the items 5 and 6 and all interventions will be completed before lunch. We will continue until they're done.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the Commission. My name is Tom Peacock, and I'm the General Manager of CJAS FM. With me today on my right, Harry Boone, CJAS Program Director. On my immediate left, Mr. Stan Davis, CJAS Chief Engineer, Broadcast Consultant with Broadcast Technical Services. And on my far left, Mr. Bill Hutton, Director of News and Information for Selkirk Communications. In March 1980, CJAS FM commenced broadcasting an all-jazz FM station. When making application to the CRTC for the license to operate this station, a determined effort was made to ensure that the program format exemplified the spirit of CRTC FM regulations. The CJAS format includes a very heavy commitment to a specific music form, much of which is drawn from Category 7 of the Radio FM Regulations, Subcategory 78. This is combined with a news magazine type spoken word format. On October 24, 1978, Vancouver Public Hearing, the Commission considered applications to provide alternate FM radio services to Vancouver, Victoria, and adjacent areas of British Columbia. With this objective in mind, we applied for a regional service with our transmitter located on Salt Spring Island. From our standpoint, the regional concept provided a greater area from which we could gather an audience for a highly specialized format. The region would allow an opportunity to become the focal point of the coastal jazz community and allow CJAS to be economically viable. Well, Madam Chairman, the regional signal was accomplished. The transmitter site on Salt Spring Island provides a clear signal to the entire east coast of Vancouver Island from Victoria to Campbell River. It is also clear on the west coast of the mainland from Seattle, Washington through Seashell to Desolation Sound. It also provides a clear signal through the Fraser Valley to Hope, BC, and into some unique areas such as Whistler Mountain Community in Harrison Hot Springs. Unfortunately, due to unforeseen topographical problems, our signal is unusable in our prime market area, that area being much of Vancouver, Burnaby, North and West Vancouver, most particularly the downtown Vancouver core, including the West End and Kitsilano. According to engineering descriptions, the signal travels from Salt Spring Island transmitter towards Vancouver, at which point it strikes a ridge of land at approximately 41st Avenue. At this point, the signal is deflected and weakened. The remaining signal, which falls into the downtown core, is combined with a reflected signal from the North Shore Mountains, causing serious multipath. When we discovered this problem, immediate tests were conducted by DEM Allen and Associates of Winnipeg to determine if the antenna was performing properly. These tests consisted of measurements on land, sea, and in helicopters. The results showed no problem with the antenna. We then contacted Mr. Marvin Crouch, consulting engineer from Ottawa, who conducted several tests to find a solution, including a test using a totally different type of antenna. The multipath problem continued. The reports from both of these tests by these consultants are on file with the Department of Communications and the Engineering Department of the CRTC. Our proposed solution was a low-power transmitter located on the top of the Century Plaza Hotel in downtown Vancouver. The signal from this transmitter would fill in much of the area not presently being served. It was suggested and ratified by the DOC that FM channel 270 could be used without preempting the use of this channel in its assigned region, Victoria. We then formally applied for this concept September 25, 1980. At least one precedent exists in Canada for the use of low-powered repeaters for coverage improvement. CITE FM1 in Sherbrooke, Quebec, was granted a license for a 50-watt repeater on a separate channel to its main broadcasting channel. In the meantime, we continued to experiment with other solutions. One concept was the use of channel 223, the second adjacent channel to 221, which is the CJAS channel. We used it as a low-power fill-in. This concept had the advantage of being beside the CJAS frequency and would require only a slight adjustment of the radio when traveling either way over the 41st Avenue Ridge. This concept, however, was rejected by the DOC as seriously affecting international negotiations with the United States. We have also had discussions with DOC on moving the transmitter from Salt Spring Island to the North Shore Mountains. This, however, would also mean the loss of service to a very wide area of the south coast of Canada, which has now had this service for more than a year. Many thousands of hours and many thousands of dollars have been spent trying to find a solution to our problem. The problem that our own consultants state and DOC staff admit they did not foresee is a very demoralizing situation to live with. For myself, who came up with the concept, and for a very enthusiastic and dedicated staff who continue to believe that it will be solved, and to thousands of listeners, of course, who live in the impaired areas, who have really tried to listen. The economic ramifications are horrendous. We forecast a loss at the end of 1980 of approximately $320,000. The actual loss was $660,000. A few months ago, we submitted to the CRTC the results of a survey of major accounts and advertising agencies. This study showed the business loss due to the signal problem to be in excess of $36,000 a month, or over $430,000 per year. These totals did not include potential business or unknown business, but rather business that advertisers were prepared to commit with a corrected signal. Another important commercial consideration is the fact that we had some very specific guidelines with regard to the type of commercial messages we would allow on the station. However, in the interest of survival, we have had to bend many of these guidelines. It's a very serious situation with losses far in excess of our predictions, and sadly, for a very specific reason, the signal. It's worth noting that when CJAS came on the air, the awareness factor in Vancouver was unbelievable. Listeners were waiting for this new concept. Advertisers were ready to place business on a station without ratings because they believed in the concept. The impact was phenomenal. You know, CJAS could have been quite an amazing success story. It would have been an economic success, yet it would exemplify the spirit of FM regulations that are so often criticized. Many of my competitors have said jokingly, at least I believe they were joking, that they're kind of pleased CJAS had a problem, for the CRTC would be holding us up as an example at future hearings for license renewals. We think that CJAS can still achieve all of the objectives we set out to achieve, but we do need help. We must solve our technical difficulties. We therefore hope that you will rule favorably for our application for Channel 270. We'd now be prepared to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peacock. I gather that you're not requesting any change in your promise of performance as originally submitted.
No.
That this is purely a technical.
Technical, yeah.
Fine, thank you. The other question I wanted to ask you, you said that over the year that you've lost $660,000, have you determined that it is all due to the signal, the lack of signal in particular prime commercial areas?
We were prepared, as I mentioned, and it's documented in part one, that we had forecast approximately $320,000 loss the first year. The document I referred to with regard to our survey of sales and advertising agencies indicates that, and you can see the breakdown, which we've done, I believe, over about 3 months, where business was booked, it tailed off. From the inside, you knew the reasons, because there were a lot of discussions about the signal. Well, we're working on it, we're going to get it fixed, we're working on it. Well, perhaps we'll wait until you do. And we found ourselves after 2 or 3 months replacing canceled business. We had a phenomenal amount of business booked when the station went on the air. And we found ourselves scrambling just to replace business that had been canceled. Well, we'll wait until such and such a time. Competitors used it as well, obviously. Used the signal problem. What are you advertising there for? Because you can't hear it, et cetera, et cetera. So we've been scrambling on a day-to-day basis to just sort of cut our losses in terms of sales rather than progress and go forward.
Imagine, Mr. Peacock, also that if one area of Vancouver is not being adequately served with a signal, that it has a spillover effect of uncertainty in other areas too. It's a lot of bad PR for the station.
There's a lot of bad PR. I think probably the simplest way to describe our problems initially, and that would be many advertisers, agencies in Vancouver can control an awful lot of advertising, and their offices are located downtown. Many of them could hear the signal at home if they lived perhaps on the South Slope or in West Vancouver, but they could not hear the station in their offices. Therefore, they knew there was a problem. They couldn't hear the station in their car, and that's the kind of argument we ran up against. When you're selling advertising, any excuse a potential advertiser can use, they will use, and they had a real good one with our situation.
I'm wondering about how well has your format been received in Vancouver? This was an innovative proposal, and I know that you started off with a big bang with a lot of very, very good publicity. And I was wondering what sort of feedback you've had from the people of Vancouver in regard to your format.
We continue to get good feedback. As a matter of fact, we just completed a study with BCIT. Of what our listeners liked about the station, what they didn't like. Unfortunately, we wanted to have the results before this hearing, but the students weren't able to have it prepared. But we do have some preliminary indications that I think, for the most part, they like the format very much, and that matches the input we get from letters and from telephone calls. They like the format very much. Obviously, the jazz fans complain about the amount of spoken word we have, but that's probably to be expected. I think that is reflected in the survey that we did at BCIT as well. But overall, the station has been accepted. From a program format standpoint, it has a very good image in the community. Unfortunately, we still get people phoning saying, "When are you going to get the signal fixed?" Because we would love to listen to it. So it's difficult to judge at this point if the concept would work in the long run. I'm not saying that these advertisers would still be with us if the format didn't work. We think the format will work. We just have to have an opportunity to prove it by having people be able to listen. And we're talking about 100, 200,000 people who can't and won't bother now. It's a very irritating to try and listen to the station.
Could you give me the steps that you've taken, Mr. Peacock, to substantiate the fact that there is indeed a technical problem? I gather DOC has done a survey. Perhaps you'd like to answer this, Mr. Davis. DOC did a survey of your signal strength throughout Vancouver. Could you just give the different substantiations that you can give us that there is indeed a serious problem with your signal?
Actually, studies were made by both our own consulting firm of DEM Allen Associates and, again, in conjunction with the local DOC representative. And it was established very definitely that there is a reception problem in the downtown core area.
And both studies were conclusive, and it was the same area?
Oh, very definitely, together, yes.
If I could just add to that, Madam Chairman, I think perhaps when the problem first occurred, the DOC did not take us too seriously, because the first survey they requested, which was done regionally, I believe a letter was sent to Ottawa, which really impaired our progress, because someone, I think, went out in a Volkswagen Rabbit and listened to the station with a monaural FM station and said, I don't think the problem is any worse than any other FM. However, we kept plugging away, and we offered to pay for a survey that could be done in conjunction with a senior DOC person, which was accomplished, and I think that's the survey that Stan is referring to. We then complete another survey of a similar nature, both listening and technically, with meter readings, with Marvin Crouch, which also is a very irritating noise that overrides high notes in music, low notes, high voice readings, low voice readings, and it's just unlistenable.
I gather, Mr. Peacock, that your service is very good up Sunshine Coast in Victoria and the rest of Vancouver, and you said you're even extending to the south. Your original application, I think, during the course of the application, you did give the idea of the regional coverage and that you would be giving a format that was not available elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But I think in the actual CRTC license, I don't think it mentioned the regional station, or that you were expected to give regional coverage, if my memory serves me right. Do you consider yourselves a regional station?
We do consider ourselves a regional station. it's developed that way, certainly. We have an awful lot of input from the United States. I've submitted letters to the CRTC from Americans saying it's really nice we find out about Canada, etc. I have a copy of the original decision here. Yeah. And when I referred to the fact that the Commission heard applications for a regional service, that was the... yes, thanks, Harry. That was from the beginning of the decision where, and I'll quote, at the Vancouver Public Hearing... This is a copy of our decision. At the Vancouver Public Hearing, the Commission considered the above-noted applicants, and that included our application plus the other ones that were put forward at that time, to provide alternate FM radio services to Vancouver, Victoria, and adjacent areas of British Columbia. We interpret that as regional. We had the desire for a regional service because we think that it's I hate to use the word minority interest, but at least it's a very select interest format, and we feel that we require that region in order to very simply gather up enough people to make it viable.
Because it is a specialty. Could I ask you, you own your transmitter on Salt Spring, don't you?
Yes, we do.
That's your own. And what sort of an investment does that entail?
It's about a $300,000 investment.
You mentioned, Mr. Peacock, that you've tried many alternatives to solve your problem. Have you concluded that the present application is your final solution?
Well, it's the only one that we preferred the second adjacency, to be honest with you, because of the fact that it was right beside the CJAS frequency. We conducted tests in the middle of the night on a couple of occasions, and we've determined to our satisfaction that it works very well, but unfortunately, the DOC is not in favor of that concept at the moment for Canadian broadcasting to utilize second adjacencies.
And you also mentioned that you had considered moving your tower to North Vancouver. Could you explore that in more detail and the problems with that?
Well, in light of the freeze, we started, I guess it was last September, actually. And we tried to get a meeting with the executive of the CRTC because we really felt that it was a very desperate situation from our standpoint. But we did receive on July 28th a letter from Lise Ouimet, and this was in response to a request from us to meet with the executive committee to discuss our problem. And one of the things put forward at that time was the moving of the transmitter. And she quoted the fact that on March 14th, the commission issued a public notice that FM applications would not be accepted for a number of locations, including Vancouver. March of this year, Bill Hutton wrote to Mr. Patnaud, informing him of a meeting that we had had with the Department of Communications in Ottawa. And we, at that time, were looking for a solution to our problem. I mean, we had an application in for Channel 270, but we were still exploring anything because we were looking at a $10,000 to $15,000 monthly loss, which we didn't feel that we could live with for very long. I'll quote from one paragraph. One solution that was proposed from the beginning was to move the transmitter from its location in Salt Spring to the North Shore of Vancouver. We've resisted this for two reasons. First, we've always believed because CJAZZ FM was designed to serve a minority interest in the music field, it's required the broadcast to the largest possible coverage area in order to achieve financial success. A move would deprive these listeners in Victoria area and along the Sunshine Coast from hearing the station. The second reason was the cost of the move. In a recent letter to us on the problem, the communications minister said, from our point of view, the preferred technical solution to the problem would be to relocate the CJAZZ station to Vancouver proper. Following last week's meetings, official of his department repeated this and said they would be willing to move with all speed to allow us to relocate to the North Shore. They were of the opinion the Sunshine Coast and Victoria Jazz stations could be served by a rebroad. They said the change of frequency, which would be required from Salt Spring to a North Shore move, because it would involve a frequency change.
Could I just stop you there, Mr. Peacock, to clarify, because of course this is being carried by cable and people should understand what's going on. It is that the present frequency that you're using in downtown Vancouver cannot be transported to North Vancouver with a tower there. You would have to have a new frequency.
Yes, I'm sorry I didn't make that clear. That is true. The 92.1 could not be used on the North Shore Mountains. We would have to switch to another frequency.
And the reason for that?
I guess it's short space to an American signal. Would that be it, Stan? It's assigned to Victoria, basically, 92.1.
That's the reason, Mr. Davis.
Yes, that is correct. Channel 221 is not usable in Vancouver proper.
So you would have to apply for another FM frequency in town?
Yes, 93.7 or 94.5 or 95.3 would be available in Vancouver.
Right, thank you.
Now, we mentioned to the DOC when they suggested we just move, and they saw the switch of the frequencies as merely an exchange. We pointed out that 92.1 is assigned to Victoria, and we would have to require an application for 93.7 or 94.5, and they said they saw that as just an exchange. But unfortunately, I guess the CRTC weren't prepared at that point to see it that way. So they suggested in a letter, in a response from Mr. Patnaud, that we wait until this hearing to air that and all of our technical problems.
If that were possible and you were able to move to the North Shore on a different frequency, you would lose your service to Victoria, Mr. Davis, and the Sunshine Coast.
Yes, very definitely.
It would be, but you would give a good coverage signal to Vancouver, which is
yes,
your primary market area.
That's correct.
And then if you were to do that, presumably you could serve the other areas with a rebroad if you wish to apply for that.
If we were allowed to apply for repeaters, we could serve those other areas, yes.
Thank you. I'll have further questions, but at the moment I'll ask counsel to continue.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In what specific area, you alluded to it, in what specific area of Vancouver is the worst impairment of your signal?
It's the downtown core, actually. The southern or the northern slope of down to Falls Creek and across the city. And then as you go up towards the upper levels on the North Shore, you're out of that problem area again.
And this area, this is where the tests were taken, I gather?
Yes, very definitely.
Were there tests made outside of this one specific downtown area in the greater Vancouver?
Are you talking about the tests to determine the quality of the signal?
Yes, sir.
Yes, very definitely. The tests were taken all over. Yes, the signal was evaluated up the valley, up and down Vancouver Island, everywhere.
Okay, and...
But the problem is really centered in the downtown core of Vancouver.
Okay, how many test points would you say you made over the city?
Over that downtown section?
Did you tell me that the actual tests were made throughout the city of Vancouver or just the downtown area? This
everywhere, story? Yes. I would say in excess of 100, 150.
And how many of these point tests showed impairment?
Well, I would say most of the test points in that downtown core area showed impairment.
Well, I'm not sure what you're saying here. Did you say that the tests were made all over the city or just the downtown area?
Listening tests,
no,
and actual measurements.
I mean engineering tests.
Engineering tests have been made to evaluate the quality of the signal over all of Vancouver and up and down Vancouver Island and up the valley.
Okay, and the worst showed in the downtown area?
Correct.
How many points were made in the downtown area?
I would say close to 30 or 40.
And how many showed something like an acceptable signal of those 30 to 40 points?
It depends on whether we're talking about mobile or stationary. There is a difference. I would say most of those points were impaired if they were taken in an automobile. You can find locations where you can receive the signal clearly if you're stationary.
Okay, well, what we have about 30 to 40 test points in the downtown core. Mm-hmm. So do you say that all of those test points show that the signal was truly impaired?
Yes, if you are driving in an automobile, you will find the whole of the downtown area impaired. You can find locations where a fixed receiver, stationary, can receive the signal adequately.
But when we say a test point, is this not stationary? You test your signal at one specific point. Is this not correct?
Well, you wouldn't do that if you were driving in a car.
Well, how do you do your tests? This is what I'm saying.
Well, it would be a subjective analysis if you were driving your car. If the signal as you drove was impaired or distorted, you would say it's just that.
Okay, but when you did those tests, were you stationary or were you driving?
Both.
Okay, now, for the one test where you were stationary, let's say you did 40 of them, how many showed an acceptable signal? None or half or...
I would say maybe 20% would be acceptable. You could find a stationary point that you could receive it properly or adequately.
Okay. Now, what about outside this downtown core? What would be the percentage of the test points you made that showed something of an acceptable signal? About the same percentage or better?
Oh, I would say out of this downtown core area, the signal is excellent.
It is?
Yes.
Now, were these tests, were made in stereo, I gather?
Both stereo and monaural.
Was there a difference in the results?
Yes.
Mono was better, of course?
Monaural would be better, yes. But still not adequate in the downtown core.
what percentage of these tests showed an acceptable signal in the mono?
I can't give you an accurate percentage, but it was still unacceptable, even though it was an improvement.
What area of Vancouver would you say your signal comes out the best?
The best? I would say as you approach 41st Avenue going south.
How would your signal then compare in this area with other stations in Vancouver?
In the downtown core or in the better?
Outside, yes, in the better part of the...
I would say the signal is equal.
How is your signal in Victoria?
Excellent.
I have a question here which is a bit philosophical. Are you looking to have, to achieve... an excellent signal all over your coverage area?
Well, we actually have an excellent signal outside of the downtown core. But the downtown core is a very important area to CJAS.
But wouldn't you say it is normal for any signal to have some weak and some strong points, reception being, of course, statistical? Of course, you are looking at the downtown area for... Where your potential audience is about, what, 200,000, you said?
It's approximately 125 to 30,000 in the area that we're primarily concerned about.
And if this application were to be accepted by the commission, were to be approved by the commission, then you would have what you would call an excellent signal throughout all of your coverage area.
It would be a good signal. We always would expect some impairment somewhere, and I think you live with some of that. But I don't think CJAS can live with the impairment they presently have in the downtown core.
Would you say that impairment, major impairment, is unusual in a major urban area, let's say Montreal, Toronto?
I don't think it can be tolerated, the amount of impairment that is present. I don't think it would be tolerated anywhere.
So you're saying that in downtown Toronto, this kind of impairment would not be seen?
It does not exist to the extent, anywhere near the extent it exists here.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you.
Mr. Grace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a couple of questions. I wanted to be clear about the extent of the nature of that loss, Mr. Peacock. The figure of $600,000 was mentioned. I take it this is bottom line loss or simply $600,000 less revenue than you might have expected. Okay.
That was the operating loss.
It's the operating loss. Thank you.
Yes.
I suppose the crucial question for us is, if your application was to be granted, your station would, in effect, occupy two scarce FM frequencies in the same market. How would you respond to critics of the CRTC that this was giving too much of a valuable limited resource to one operator?
Well, I think perhaps in this particular situation, the CRTC and CJAS are kind of in bed together. We had a very ambitious application we were very enthusiastic about, and we're looking for a solution. This is a solution to our problem. We have a clear signal over the wide region. Unfortunately, in the downtown core in Kitsilano and Point Grey, where the type of listeners who would listen to this type of station live, we can't get them. We can't get at them. And we're just merely looking for a solution.
I appreciate that, but the solution to your problem would make problems for other people, and they're trying to.
Well,
one has to balance this.
I haven't discussed this with CRTC, but with DOC, I posed that very question because, as I mentioned, there's an example in Sherbrooke, Quebec. I couldn't get them to comment on that very often until we pressed and pressed and pressed, and finally they said, "Well, that's a special case." Well, then I would consider this to be a special case. I was fairly happy with his answer at the end. If it's a special case, then I said, okay, I'll try and make this a special case because I believe it is a special case.
Thank you.
Fine. Mr. Peacock, then I would think that this application stands on its own. You see two possible solutions. The present application, which would give you an excellent coverage of your whole Vancouver area and the regional area at a minimal extra cost. And then the other alternative, depending on different approvals, might be, if it were possible, to change the frequency, move to the North Shore, which would be a considerable cost for a new tower, etc. You would release your old frequency, and then you would lose coverage to Victoria, Sunshine Coast, and would have to be done with rebroads. Are those your alternatives that you see at the moment?
That's about the size of our alternatives. I did want to comment on a remark made by counsel about the seriousness of the signal. This is something that we have been getting feedback on from day one, that all FM broadcast operations have a reception problem. We know that's true. The local stations have some areas where they have a reception problem. But I just want to go on record that I haven't found a reception problem in Canada that exists as serious as this does in such an important area, not only from a revenue-generating standpoint, but as I just mentioned, we feel that a large segment of our potential listeners live in that area. They are the kinds of people that would like our radio station. And right now they can't get it.
Mr. Peacock, when you say the downtown core, could you just define that by street to street from east to west and north to south?
Well, basically the... Yeah, okay, Stan, if you'd like to comment on it.
I would say from Stanley Park to the P&E, from the waterfront, the North Shore, to 33rd, or partway up the hill to 41st.
So when you say the downtown core, that's the area that you mean specifically?
The bottom of the saucer.
Okay.
It's also, if I might add, we're not going to solve all of the areas. There's the north side of that ridge we're talking about goes all the way from UBC to New Westminster, and obviously with this low power, we're not going to get as far as New Westminster, so we're still going to have impaired areas, but we feel that that this is the most important section of our impaired area that we want to fill in.
Am I to also understand that your use of this frequency would be compatible still with CBC using it for French in Victoria?
Yes.
There would be no problem?
That's right.
Thank you. Mr. Peacock, you started to tell me the cost involved in moving your antenna to the North Shore. Did you wish to give me that figure?
Yes, it's approximately $350,000.
And the problem is serious enough that you're prepared to do that if it were possible?
Well, we would have to. We can't exist the way it is now.
Okay. Just one last question, Mr. Davis. As you know, I'm no technical expert. I want to ask you, is it ever possible to use your present frequency as a drop-in on a low power, the same frequency, to drop into your area?
Absolutely not.
Unequivocally.
Yes.
Mr. Robson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Peacock, I just have a couple of brief questions. I wonder if you could give me some idea in dollar or percentage terms as to your revenue base that would be derived from the downtown core area, or the area that's most technically impaired.
Well, as I mentioned in the when referring to the survey of advertising agencies, the figure that we came up with was approximately $36,000 in business that we feel we could get additional monthly business. And if you relate that and refer back to my comment about the station being a success perhaps in the first year, if we had had the advantage of that revenue from day one, the estimated $320,000 operating loss would not have existed, because we would have made an additional $430 to $1,000 gross based on that. That is the figure we feel that we can increase by if we get the signal solved. We're obviously going to have perhaps a $50,000, $70,000, $100,000 investment to re-educate people now. I mean, we spent that amount of money promoting the radio station in various forms to begin with, and we're going to have to face that all over again with the with whatever change we come up with. So that's kind of an add-on to whatever our solution is.
Would you consider that your marketing effort in your coverage area is aggressive? Are you
Yes, we are aggressive. Perhaps in some cases too aggressive. We also solicit advertising in Victoria, and have been. There is a market there. The Victoria stations seem to be able to live with what we're taking out of the market, which is not great, but it does help with our identity. Commercials do that. If you can involve yourself with businesses and activities in Victoria, which we do, it helps with the identity, and they feel a part of the overall thing.
What kind of feedback are your salespeople getting when they're soliciting new clients in the impaired area?
The same story.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Well, our salespeople have stopped pressing the fact that we're going to find a solution, because it got rather silly after about 6 months. So we have tried to solicit business in areas where the signal is not impaired, the Richmond Delta, some parts of Surrey, Fraser Valley, even Bellingham, Washington. But it's not ideal, and it's not the type of commercial that we envisioned on this type of radio station. I think it would be fair to say that the type of person that would listen to C-Jazz and does listen to C-Jazz would be basically anti-commercial, actually. So you have to attempt to approach that problem and make the commercials least offensive as possible. And we did have some strict guidelines along those areas, but quite frankly, we've had to bend some of those rules and perhaps run some commercials more often than we would have allowed in order to get the business.
Well, now your technical problem certainly would be I'd put a damper on new commercial business. What has that done to you in terms of actual business that you've lost? Not potential, but actual business. Have you had many advertisers withdraw?
Oh, yes, we had it initially. We'll wait and see. We'll wait until you... And you get all kinds of offers. If you can guarantee that 100 people will walk through my door, I'll advertise with you. I mean, you can't operate that way. It's a demoralizing situation from the standpoint of the sales staff, too. But we have pretty much the same staff as we started with, and as I mentioned in my opening remarks, they love the station, and they want it solved, and they believe in it, and we appreciate their loyalty and their dedication. They've gone along with us when we've said, okay, shift the accent from perhaps major advertisers over to smaller businesses and smaller retail businesses, and they do believe in it, and that's why I feel that the station can be viable if the signal can be solved. Mm-hmm. I think it can be very, very viable.
Just one final question. What is the revenue potential in those areas where your signal is good? Is there some growth there?
We have not had a great deal of growth. You see, the difficulty you run into is we have a good signal in Richmond, and we had a major Richmond account, a shopping center that involves many other retail outlets within it, obviously. And the advertising council of the shopping center purchased the station, and were descended upon by competitors saying, why are you buying that station? The pressure goes because eventually it ends up in an advertising agency which is located downtown, and someone marches in and said, well, you're buying this thing. And it's a very difficult argument because that person who perhaps is even going to defend you is going to listen to your station from Richmond up to 41st Avenue, and then by the time he gets to the office where he has to defend you, he's been listening to a very garbled radio station, and he isn't standing on a very strong soapbox by the time he gets there, because he's usually annoyed himself. And this kind of thing has just been going on and on and on with a great number of accounts. We have only had growth in the area of smaller businesses in areas where the signal can be heard, and that has only replaced business that we lost through cancellation.
Thank you.
Mr. Klingel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Davis, I'd like to go back to the exchange that you had with Commission Counsel. I believe you related to him that you took a number of tests, somewhere around 30 different points. They were both stationary tests and mobile tests. Now, I take it that you've recorded the reception at all of these points selected. Is that correct?
Yes, and this was submitted to the Commission.
Yes, yeah. Well, that was my next question.
When you say recorded, listed.
Yeah, listed, point yes. by point.
Documented.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. And this was submitted.
And that has been submitted.
Yes.
Mr. Peacock, I believe you gave the cost of the new antenna in the event that you were required to change frequencies. What about the rebroads? Would you also go along with the three rebroads, and what would be the cost thereof?
We haven't approached the rebroads because it was merely suggested by DOC. It's never been suggested by CRTC. We would have to take the guidelines from the Commission rather than DOC. The DOC suggested sort of offhandedly that these areas that would lose the signal could be served by rebroads. We said yes, they could be served by rebroads. However, the CRTC are the people who are going to decide whether that would happen or not. And we would have to, quite frankly, sit down and discuss whether we wanted to make that investment. I think it would probably be a capital cost of $50,000 per rebroad, even if they were low power, and then the monthly operating cost of getting the signal there. I think we'd have to examine that before we got serious about it.
I wonder if Mr. Hutton could it be any help in this regard. When you bring out the big gun from Central Canada.
The big gun from Central Canada lives here now. No, I'm afraid.